It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Democratic National Convention continues this evening with some big names taking the stage, virtually that is. Senator Kamala Harris will accept her party's nomination for vice president. Former President Barack Obama and 2016 presidential nominee Hillary Clinton will also address delegates and the nation. Last night, 17 rising stars in the party delivered a keynote address. One of them, first-term State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta of Philadelphia, the first openly gay person of color member in the legislature. Representative, taking part in this keynote address, it's considered a recognition of your future in the Democratic Party. What do you envision your political future to be?
I will say this. My future is very much my present. Working people have not been represented nearly enough at all levels of government, particularly, you know, if you think about Congress or even the state house, you have a lot of millionaires, multimillionaires who are members. But what we're seeing across the Commonwealth and what I think my election represented are people who are from poor and working poor backgrounds, folks who have a variety of different lived experiences, stepping up and saying, listen, we don't want to just be represented by somebody who, you know, understands our issues. We want to be represented by somebody who's lived our issues. And, you know, that's the power of this moment.
Do you see politics as a career?
Politics, I always say to folks, and it's just about voting as well, right? This is one way for you to be engaged. You know, before I ever, you know, thought about running for something, I was just involved in my local community talking about these issues. And now I have an opportunity to not just talk about them, right? But to actually introduce legislation to address them. And so whether I continue in this role or, you know, whether I'm back in the nonprofit sector or the private sector, these issues are issues I'm not going to be quiet about.
You spoke during a time slot that an up-and-coming Democrat addressed the nation in 2004, a state senator from Illinois and future President Barack Obama. Does that make it extra special?
You know what? It does. You know, it's not just President Obama who's spoken in this role before, but you also have dynamic leaders like Ann Richards, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, and to be a part of that small group who has been able to, you know, speak to the nation and to the party in this way is incredibly moving, you know, and to be the first Black queer person and the first person from North Philly to speak in this way is huge. It's something I could have never expected. And I know, you know, I've lost both of my parents even before I turned 30, but I know that they are smiling down, you know, cheering me on.
You mentioned your parents cheering you on from above. How did they influence you in terms of public service?
My dad was a social worker, and so he had a deep care for folks that our society has often ignored. And my mom was a homemaker, and then she's a home health care aide. But, you know, I'll tell this very brief story. I was 11 or 12, coming home on a block in Woodstock Street, a block in my district. And I was sent, you know, talking to my mom about all the issues I saw in the neighborhood. And, you know, without skipping a beat, my mom was a tough Black woman. She said, you know what, if you care so much, go do something about it. And that message has stuck with me my entire life. If we care, then we need to do something about it. And that's what my engagement in politics, where it springs from, and why I've stayed engaged. Because nobody's coming to save us. If we want to see change in our communities, it's going to come from within our communities. And I think for young people who's so often here, wait your turn. The time for turns is over. There are big issues that need to be addressed right now, and young people are going to be the ones who I think are going to help lead that charge. And I'm happy to speak in solidarity with this group.
What is the message from you that you hope lingers well beyond the close of the Democratic Convention Thursday night?
Government matters. Good government matters. Competent government matters. And if we're going to have a government for the people, by the people, then we need everyday folks to rise up and run for office. And so my hope is that when people look and say, oh my gosh, wow, look at Malcolm, and how cool is that, that a young guy from North Philly is speaking at the convention, it's really not about me. I hope that people look up and say, you know what, I can do that too.
Representative Kenyatta, you took part in a Black Lives Matter protest at the State House in early June. You said at the time the Commonwealth residents were taking to the streets and nothing has been done. It's been more than 2 months since then. Has there been any movement?
We passed two bills to make sure that officers who have a history of misconduct cannot just move from jurisdiction to jurisdiction the way they've been able to right now. We've also been able to deal with the type of training, not only on bias, but also in terms of how officers engage with the general public. There's a variety of different things that we need to do. But we have made more progress in the last couple of months than we've made in the last dozen years.
That is State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta of North Philadelphia. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for taking the time and for all you do.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Performing arts organizations have been trying to adapt during this pandemic. How do you get your artistry in front of fans if it's nearly impossible to do so in an indoor venue? James McNeil is the managing director of City Theater, which has reimagined its 46th season. James, you're beginning the season September 10th with the Drive-In Community Arts Festival at Hazelwood Green. I believe 8 different arts organizations will actually be taking part.
Hi, Kevin. Yeah, that's right. This was our new look at how to perform during COVID. And yeah, we're building an outdoor stage with a drive-in screen in a parking lot out at the Hazelwood Green development site. And we're going to have a dozen different nights of unique programming to kick off our 46th season.
Give us a little taste of what you will be doing in terms of your programming for that festival.
Sure. Well, for that first part of the festival, we really are celebrating Pittsburgh's eclectic cultural community. It really is a celebration of our colleagues across the sector. And then after that, we will be pivoting to what would have been the show to kick off our 46th season indoors, Frankenstein, from this incredible theatrical group out of Chicago called Manual Cinema. And that will be having a much longer 3-week sit down again at the drive-in stage.
Okay, so why this particular location, Hazelwood Green, a major redevelopment site?
Obviously, with COVID-19, it's not possible for us to produce inside our theater, and it probably won't be possible for quite some time. And so we wanted to try to find a way to continue to do work. So this summer, we kind of latched onto this idea of what if we build an outdoor stage? What if it was a drive-in? And we came upon the site at Hazelwood Green, and it really offered everything we could possibly want. It's a large parking lot. It's a beautiful landscaped area. It's a recognizable location. It's pretty close to us on the south side. And most importantly, they were interested in working with us. They were eager, willing partners on this. And so it was really kind of a match made in heaven.
This will be the first in-person performance for City Theater since the shutdown began in mid-March. Are you and the directors and the actors just itching to get before a live audience?
We miss it. I mean, we are in a business that peddles and people coming together and sharing space to experience something. And that's just not been an option. And then ever since then, we've continued to generate art. We really had to lean into Zoom and the virtual platforms that are out there. And since mid-March, we've created over 40 unique pieces of digital content, some of them as short as a few minutes long, others full-length plays. And with that, we've reached over 28,000 folks, but it's still not the same thing as being able to see your audience in the eyes, share moments as they play out in real time on stage collectively. And so absolutely, we are all just itching to get back to celebrating the power of live art.
Performing outdoors, that's actually a return to City Theater's roots, isn't it?
Yeah, City Theater first started in the mid-70s. Its original name was City Park Players. For the first several years, what City Theater was known for was playing for free in parks and other public settings around Allegheny County. It very much is a throwback to City Theater's early days, and there's something rather beautiful about that.
outdoors will be your home. Hazelwood Green will be your home for at least a while.
Well, through the fall, Pittsburgh has a little thing called winter, which will probably make an outdoor program impossible. But we're still committed to continuing our 46th season. So after we're done with the drive-in stage at Hazelwood Green, we're going to pivot to other programming. We've sort of dabbled this summer, as I said, in virtual environments. And so we're looking to actually continue to create some full-length shows this summer in the digital space.
James McNeil is the Managing Director of City Theater. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Joining me now on The Confluence is the President and CEO of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, Malia Taranjo. Malia, the 2020-21 season was supposed to be a very special season, the 125th anniversary. You've canceled all previously scheduled concerts through December, but you'll be providing digital content, such as...
We've pivoted a few times during the pandemic, but this most recent iteration is we're going to be somewhat producing almost like PBS-type documentaries, a number of them, a series of them throughout the fall. Each program will have a theme, and then it'll really be about getting the musicians out in the different iconic places within Pittsburgh. The idea is to have it be free and really expand the access to the orchestra during this challenging time.
Malia, for this season, whether it's online or maybe back in Heinz Hall eventually, is there any music or composition or composer that you think speaks to the moment of trial and upheaval in the country? Would you consider adding that to the program? Or do you want music that maybe helps lift the spirit and get rid of sort of the depressing times we've been in?
Everything that we're planning is a little bit of both. I mean, this platform that we are able to provide, the beauty of it is that it brings people together, it lifts the spirit, it heals, it soothes, it provides an outlet for sorrow. And so, you know, as we're looking at what we're going to be doing, we're looking at smaller ensembles for the most part, chamber orchestra sized programs, because that's what we can do socially distanced.
When you recently announced the cancellation of the previously scheduled concerts for the remainder of 2020, you indicated that you hope to resume performances for the in-person audiences at Heinz Hall in January. Is that realistic given we might not even have a vaccine till the end of the year at the very earliest?
We are trying to be optimistic, and I think we don't know what we don't know. And if there's one thing we've learned over the past few months is that taking this in chunks is the best approach.
So what are you planning for that mini 21 season starting in January, fingers crossed?
Well, you know, the actual anniversary of the orchestra is February 27th, which we had a big program that we were going to have on the anniversary weekend. So we have a new tact on it, and we're going to launch the 125th anniversary on the anniversary, February 27th. We are working out the details, but it might have to be a virtual launch, and hopefully it will be an in-person launch along with it. So the new plan is, you know, we've been around for 125 years. It's almost ironic that this is the way that we're going to, you know, shift our plans, but we are moving forward. And, you know, the 21-22 season, the 2021 year, starting on February 21st, or 27th, pardon me, is going to launch a whole year after that of the celebration, which will then go into the 50th anniversary of Heinz Hall as part of the 21-22 season.
Malia Taranjo is president and CEO of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Thanks and congratulations on 125 years.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. As of early August, the Pittsburgh Foundation's Emergency Action Fund had raised $9 million for COVID-19 relief, with most of it in use by 313 nonprofits who are trying to continue their services during the health and economic crises. And today is the annual one-day critical needs alert. Kelly Uranker is the director of the Center for Philanthropy at the Pittsburgh Foundation. Today, the foundation is providing $450,000 to match a portion of the contributions. So, Kelly, who is going to benefit from this?
So our nonprofit field in the region, over 200 nonprofits will benefit from online giving. So food insecurity, shelter, transportation, childcare, and physical and mental health, our people need to be taken care of on an annual basis.
And have you noticed any change over these few months about the needs?
They are still out there. As we face the upcoming end of the unemployment benefits period and the moratorium on evictions being over, we expect that the need for services will increase at least by 50%.
You've raised $9 million for the Emergency Action Fund. Are those recipients different from those who are eligible, who will benefit from the Critical Needs Giving Day?
So the recipients of the Emergency Action Fund are a bit broader. They were primarily basic needs organizations, but they were also arts organizations that had gigs or performances canceled from March through the end of July. So the 200 organizations that are in Westmoreland and Allegheny County for critical needs are primarily organizations that provide health care, transportation, child care, food, or shelter.
Kelly, there are small nonprofits that don't have the reserves or even large donor bases or marketing directors to get the word out. How do you make sure that these small nonprofits that do provide critical services in their communities, in their neighborhoods, are being helped and therefore can continue to assist their clients?
Correct. We feel that nonprofits that are in the neighborhoods, seeing people are within walking distance, are incredibly effective. And most of our nonprofit region operates individually on a budget of $600,000 or less. These nonprofits are small and mighty. For example, the Arsenal Family and Children's Center in the East End. They have a preschool program. They take a two-generation approach and have their parents involved in it as well. They are trying to keep those kids safe, safely distanced, and have their parents and families be able to work and be educated.
And I assume that there are many such examples like the Arsenal program that you just mentioned.
There are. There's Feeding the Spirit in Westmoreland County. Feeding the Spirit has provided emergency hotel rooms for those who are homeless, weekly meals, a pantry, and Westmoreland is unique in that it does not have a lot of shelters as opposed to Allegheny County. So they are also part of the Critical Needs Alert, and they will also be eligible for the match at pittsburghgives.org.
Kelly Uranker is the director of the Center for Philanthropy at the Pittsburgh Foundation, which today is hosting the hashtag One Day Critical Needs Giving event. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.